Today is Wednesday, August 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Italian authorities said on Wednesday that at least 37 people died in Tuesday's highway bridge collapse in Genoa. The White House expresses frustration over the lack of progress in resolving disagreements with Turkey. Plus, what happened with Chinese authorities when they detained a VOA Mandarin service correspondent, and more on U.S. Secretary of Defense Mattis' trip to Latin America. It's all ahead on International Edition. Italian authorities said on Wednesday that at least 37 people died in Tuesday's highway bridge collapse in Genoa. To get an update on what's taking place as rescuers continue to search through the rubble for survivors, I'm joined on the phone from Italy by reporter Sabina Castelfranco. Sabina, what can you tell us about what's taking place in Genoa today?
The rescue efforts to find any possible survivors or to pluck bodies out of the cars that crashed down from the bridge are still underway. Authorities are saying that the search and rescue operation will continue until every missing person has been accounted for. So it's a round-the-clock operation. They continue during the night, and they will not stop until everybody is accounted for. At the moment, we have a death toll of 39, with 16 people being treated in the hospitals. Of these 16, 12 are in very serious condition.
Sabina, with it being 24 hours on, do authorities think those that are still missing, is there a likelihood that they are still alive in the rubble?
Well, there could be some pockets of air. So they work under the assumption that there could be still somebody alive. They're working on this, on what happened on this disaster, just like they would operate in an earthquake.
Have authorities been able to ascertain as to what exactly happened that caused this bridge to collapse?
No, they haven't, and a full investigation will take place. But obviously, this bridge was built in 1967. That's when the construction of this bridge finished. And the amount of traffic that was being carried by this bridge at the time is seriously very different from the heavy traffic that was it was carrying, you know. Particularly yesterday, there were more than 35 vehicles on this bridge, and some of them very heavy. And today, we're going to be seeing the Italian infrastructure minister and the two deputy prime ministers have a meeting with the Italian prime minister, Giuseppe Conte, and they will discuss in Genoa all together what happened and what measures need to be taken. But certainly, I think following this incident, much more is going to be done to check Italian highways, bridges, and tunnels.
Sabina, how are people in Italy responding to this collapse?
Oh, the general public is just shocked by what's happened. It's a public holiday here today. There's no reason to celebrate anything in Italy today, certainly not in Genoa. You know, there's a lot of people who have lost their families. It's unheard of for many people, and a lot of them have voiced this, that something like this should happen in the 21st century. We should have roads that function and not bridges that collapse. So yes, people are very upset indeed and want to know what exactly happened.
Sabina Castelfranco is on the phone with us from Italy. Thank you so much for the update. Among other top stories, a suicide bomb blast inside one of Kabul's educational institutions killed at least 48 people and wounded several others. The Taliban has denied involvement in Wednesday's blast. British counterterrorism police have not publicly identified the 29-year-old British national, originally from Sudan, that they arrested on Tuesday after he crashed a car into a group of pedestrians and cyclists outside the Houses of Parliament in London. He's being held on suspicion of preparation of a terrorist act as well as attempted murder. Closing arguments are set to take place on Wednesday in the tax and bank fraud trial of U.S. President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. Extended coverage of these stories and more are at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Cassini mission, which provided a close look of Saturn, its moons, and famous rings for 13 years, came to a blazing end on September 11, 2017. One of the highlights of the Cassini mission was the 2014 discovery of geysers spewing jets of icy water high above Saturn's moon Enceladus. A team of scientists led by the University of Heidelberg, Germany, studied data gathered by Cassini and identified fragments of large, complex organic molecules containing hundreds of atoms originating from Saturn's icy moon. Cassini had previously detected smaller, more common organic molecules at Enceladus. The scientists say the existence of these large complex molecules, along with hydrothermal activity on the moon, supports a theory that a massive liquid water ocean below the icy crust of Enceladus may provide a habitable environment for life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. Turkey on Wednesday raised the stakes in the dispute with the United States, raising tariffs on several U.S. imports, including passenger cars, alcohol, and tobacco. Tensions with the U.S. have simmered over the detention of Americans, including Protestant pastor Andrew Brunson, Turkey's demand of an exiled Muslim cleric, Fethullah Gulen, to be extradited for his alleged role in the failed 2016 coup, and the imposition of tariffs and sanctions by both sides. Gary Huffbauer is a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He told VOA's Victor Beatty that Turkey's economic woes stem from its high debt load and U.S. tariffs were the match that sparked the fire, prompting this year's sharp fall in the Turkish currency, the lira. The central bank is trying to reverse it.
And when President Trump put on the extra tariffs, that was the match. Without the very, very extensive external dollar and euro-denominated debt, we wouldn't have seen this. But then once the crisis started, the lira falls, and suddenly the debt looks bigger to all the firms when you express it in lira, and it just feeds on itself. The amount of the fall was just amazing. It's about almost 70%.
What did the central bank do?
They put capital controls, meaning that nobody in Turkey can take out dollars or euros. The second thing they do, but I know Erdogan doesn't want them to do this, is to sharply raise interest rates.
They have talked about injecting liquidity into the market. What does that mean?
What it means is that they're going to use their reserves of dollars, and they also hold some gold and euros, not a lot. When they say inject liquidity, what that means is they're going to buy lira. People are bidding up the lira in hopes it'll go a bit higher. That's a very temporary solution. The other thing they said, they weren't going to go to the IMF. Well, I know countries often say that when they're in crisis, but that's the only place they're going to be able to borrow, let's say, significant amounts of money. Like $30, $40 billion.
The Indian rupee fell to an all-time low on Tuesday against the dollar. Why would that occur?
What you've got is a lot of currency traders who look for correlations between currencies. And when one falls of a developing country, they look at other currencies, which in the past have been moved in sympathy, whether or not the countries are geographically close or have a lot of trade or whatever. They're just looking at correlations. India has some problems, nothing like Turkey, but they have some problem as well. So I think the traders just piled in and sold the rupee.
Mr. Erdogan is under pressure from his own industrialists, his own business sector, to resolve this matter. How serious a problem is this, and how quickly do you think a diplomatic solution might be forthcoming?
What Trump requested was a very modest objective, namely release of that pastor and a couple of other people. I mean, as objectives for economic sanctions, and that's what the steel tariffs were and aluminum tariffs, this was a very modest objective. So the only reason Erdogan has done it is pride.
Gary Hofbauer said the U.S. has more leverage over Turkey. It could block any effort by Ankara to secure loans from the International Monetary Fund or European banks. He said Mr. Erdogan's autocratic approach is not helping his case in Europe, making him vulnerable to pressure. Chinese authorities detained a Voice of America Mandarin Service correspondent named Yibing Feng and VOA contractor Alan Ai for at least 6 hours Monday evening. VOA Director Amanda Bennett said, quote, "It is outrageous that two journalists have been detained for nothing more than doing their jobs. It's the job of journalists to find out what's going on, to talk to people in the news, and that's all that they were doing," end quote. What you're about to hear is audio from a video that was taken by the reporters as police were ushering them out of an apartment building in Jinan, Shandong Province. Yibing Feng and Alan Yi were taken into custody as they attempted to interview retired Chinese professor Sun Wenguang. He was taken away by police during a live television interview with VOA nearly 2 weeks ago. Joining me via Skype from Beijing is VOA Mandarin Service correspondent Yibing Feng. Yibing, we've heard the audio of you and Alan Ai with police in the apartment hallway being taken away, but can you put that experience into your own words?
You know, we were at the door of the apartment resided by Professor Sun Wenguang and his wife, who were missing for the last 2 weeks or so. And, you know, we found them home, and we tried to interview Professor Sun at the door. Because, you know, the door was locked just because secret police were still around.
Were they there the entire time you were trying to question him?
Yeah, so they found us there talking with Professor Sun, and they were watching and trying to interrupt the interview several times, sometimes by force. And but we managed to complete the interview, during which Professor Sun told us he and his wife were dragged away from home right in the middle of a live interview with VOA. And they were, he told us that, you know, they had been put in a locked up hotel room.
And then when you and Alan were taken by the police, the secret police that were there, what happened to you?
Yeah. So, you know, just because Professor Sun was trying to tell the truth, that the secret police were trying to force them to tell a lie, saying that they were traveling, they were on a tour. And the head of the secret police on the spot was trying to stop us. And then, you know, several guys, all in plain clothes, and with just maybe one or two as security guards. So they were in uniform. And they dragged us away from the apartment door, and they put us into two separate cars.
And where did they take you?
I was put in the car, they drove me round and round in the city. About an hour later, they went back to the building where the professor was living. Then they just tried, you know, during this whole time, they just tried to ask me about the code of my cell phones, you know, which we used to take the film during the interview.
Now, did you feel physically threatened at any point during this?
Yes, you know, just because, you know, I refused to let them know the password.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the access code. All of a sudden, you know, maybe two, thugs appeared, and one of them blowed me at my cheek, mm-hmm. And also on my chest. Mm. He tried to scare me. He said, you know, I'm from the black society or mafia.
Yibing, we are glad that you and Alan are all right. VOA Mandarin Service correspondent Yibing Feng was recounting his experience of being detained by authorities in China via Skype. This is International Edition.
Border Crossings knows you want the hottest music, and we're here to give it to you.
Give me something nice and shiny.
Join host Larry London at 1500 Universal every weekday in August for your chance to win a copy of the new Now That's What I Call Music Volume 67 CD.
Music to my ears.
Featuring the biggest hits from Maroon 5.
Girls like you run around with guys like me.
Selena Gomez.
No, I'd go back to you.
Post Malone, Cardi B, and more.
This is your all-access pass to the biggest songs of the summer.
Hey, 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 special delivery.
Don't miss out on your chance to snag a free copy of Now 67, with different ways to win every weekday in August.
I'm the girl who's gonna win the special prize at the end.
Well, you do seem confident, and confidence is key.
Only on Border Crossings.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. Lawyers representing Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa have filed papers urging the country's constitutional court to throw out an opposition challenge to his election. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has said Mnangagwa and the ruling ZANU-PF party won the July 30th election in this politically and economically troubled South African country's first election without former longtime ruler Robert Mugabe on the ballot. The Electoral Commission said Mnangagwa received 50.8% of the vote. The main opposition MDC party filed a legal challenge to the results on Friday. U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis is cautioning South American nations about Chinese aggression. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is traveling with the secretary in the region. Speaking from Buenos Aires, Argentina, she tells International Edition's Sarah Williams about Mattis's comments.
Secretary Mattis is trying to tell all of the nations he's visiting in South America that the United States wants to remain the partner of choice when going with military relationships, also following on a visit from the vice president on diplomatic and economic relations as well. But while he was speaking to a group of military students yesterday in Rio, the secretary was cautioning against Chinese aggression in the region. And based on the questions that people asked him, he was able to talk about everything from space to economics to the South China Sea.
I believe Secretary Mattis' comments on the South China Sea got quite a bit of attention. What did he say about that?
Secretary Mattis basically said that because of China's actions in the South China Sea, it is shredding the trust of the nations in the area by the militarization. He was asked about an exercise called RIMPAC. It's the Rim of the Pacific exercises. And China was disinvited to these exercises this year after they acted contrary to what their president had publicly promised. Mattis said that after thinking about this, he saw that China moved weapons into the Spratly Islands in the South China Sea after saying they would not do so. And after that, he goes, there's no need for militarization of those islands. China broke their word, and therefore they do not need to be in these exercises where we're promoting freedom of navigation.
How much of an overture has China made to these countries in South America?
Well, Chinese influence is primarily commercial here, but experts have been telling me that there are reasons why the Chinese have been wanting to make inroads in the military atmosphere as well. Basically, it all goes back to economics. They want to make these military inroads so they can protect and secure their products. But Secretary Mattis has cautioned against these partnerships, saying that respect for each other comes first and look at the deals that they're making elsewhere. He pointed to a deal that China had made with Sri Lanka, where the Chinese gave the Sri Lankans great loans they could not pay off. And so the Chinese ended up taking their port. Sri Lanka handed over the port to Beijing for 99 years after Sri Lanka could not make its payments. So he said, respect for each other comes first. Let's make sure democracies, which is another cut at China, let's make sure democracies stay on top. Don't allow China to use predatory economics and pile massive debt on anybody in this hemisphere.
Carla, what did Secretary Mattis have to say in regard to space? I believe he was asked a question about that.
So Secretary Mattis called for partnering with Brazilians and others in the area to defend what he called American assets in space. He was actually asked about whether or not a space force would be militarizing space. And he said, well, China demonstrated in 2007 that they could destroy one of their own satellites. He said, we understand this message China was sending. They can take out potentially one of our satellites. Satellites are used for everything from GPS to communications to weather. We need to protect those assets. And so he called on partnering, and again, he cautioned partnering with other countries like the Chinese or the Russians.
That was VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb speaking to my colleague Sarah Williams from Buenos Aires. And finally, on this day in 1483, the Sistine Chapel was consecrated by Pope Sixtus IV. And in 1945, in a pre-recorded radio address, Japan's Emperor Hirohito announced that his country had accepted terms of surrender for ending World War II. Today, Japan's Emperor Akihito expressed his deep regret for his country's actions during the Second World War. The 84-year-old emperor revealed his remorse during a ceremony at Tokyo's Budokan Hall. And you know what? That is going to do it for today's International Edition. Patrice Martin directed the program, and Sule Terawale engineered the broadcast. But before I go, I would like to thank you for taking time out of your day to join us. Now, to keep up with the latest pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow The Voice of America on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a wonderful Wednesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a recent speech in Washington addressing the previous or current violations of either the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty or the Chemical Weapons Convention by the regimes of Syria and Iran, Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of Arms Control, Verification, and Compliance, Yalem Poblete, said all responsible nations are challenged. Dr. Poblete noted that the U.S. national security strategy under President Donald Trump calls for the augmentation of measures to prevent the spread of and to eliminate weapons of mass destruction and related materials, their delivery systems and technologies. It further underscores the need to hold state and non-state actors accountable for the use of WMD. Regarding chemical weapons, Assistant Secretary Poblete pointed out that the Assad regime has brazenly violated the international norm prohibiting their use. The Joint Investigative Mechanism of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons and the UN clearly established that the Syrian regime was responsible for four cases of chemical weapons use against the Syrian people. Syria also remained in continued noncompliance with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and its safeguards agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency. Assad started to construct an undeclared plutonium production reactor in the Da'er al-Zour region, which was destroyed by Israel in an airstrike in 2007. Syria has persistently refused to cooperate with investigators from the IAEA about the reactor or address outstanding questions about its activities at the site and other related sites. With regard to Iran and its nuclear ambitions, the Iran nuclear deal from which the United States withdrew in May was severely flawed. Assistant Secretary Poblete said that among its chief defects, the deal failed to prevent Iran from ever having fissile material production capabilities that would permit it to rapidly break out into weaponization. In addition, its verification provisions did not go far enough, and most concerning of all, it did not cover Iran's missile or chemical weapons programs. Assistant Secretary Poblete cited President Trump's assertion in the National Security Strategy that the scourge of the world today is a small group of rogue regimes that violate all principles of free and civilized states. The response to those states must be constant vigilance. Noncompliance and blatant disregard of international legal obligations must be thoroughly reviewed, documented, and assessed, Assistant Secretary Poblete emphasized. Then, appropriate action and accountability can and must follow.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.